Chapter 8. Iroh considers not going straight back to the shop, but his nerves are frayed and on high alert. All he wants to do is be back in the Jasmine Dragon, where he feels more in control. It's irrational. He knows that he ought to be happy, to be relieved that, all things considered, it had gone so easily. It had been less of a fight than Iroh had been expecting, and he's not sure if it makes him more or less furious. Iroh had known that Ozai didn't love his son. No one with even a drop of love for another person could ever treat a child like that. But the lack of regard at all, like Zuko isn't even worth the breath it takes to fight for him, is cold and chilling and infuriating. Iroh is relieved that it went easily, but it shouldn't have had to happen at all. Pian Dao catches him by the elbow at the door, before he's even completely in the building.
"Well?" he asks.
Iroh musters up a smile for him.
"He agreed to my terms," he says simply.
"Be careful, friend. For someone who tries so hard to not care, you're caring awfully hard." Pian Dao glares.
"I'm not an asshole, Iroh."
Iroh sees a flash of black by the brewing stations and looks past his friend's shoulder. Across the shop, Zuko's trailing behind Teruko while she talks to customers and fills orders. Someone's found him a red apron and folded up the front so that it fits him a little better, even though the strings are so long that they loop around his waist twice. She stops at a table and rummages through her pockets for her order pad and pen, and Iroh can see his nephew stop behind her and tuck his fingers into the hem of her shirt. He's not pulling, just holding. Teruko notices. He knows she does, but does an excellent job of pretending that she doesn't. Iroh wants to give her a raise. Pian Dao follows his gaze, and the side of his lip twists up a millimeter or two.
"I think she's adopted him," he comments, with an idle sort of shrug. "He's been following her around like a puppy since you left."
"Can I justify giving her a raise?"
"She's late every other shift, eats behind the counter, and gives lip."
Iroh says nothing. Eventually, Pian Dao sighs.
"If you want to deal with a possible mutiny and accusations of nepotism from the rest of your staff, be my guest."
"Is it still nepotism if the person being favored isn't family?"
"I'm not sure it'll matter."
Iroh considers it further and lets the matter drop, only to bring up another of higher importance. "While I have you here, I'm afraid that I'll need another favor from you." Pian Dao follows Iroh's golden-eyed stare, watches the little splash of black and red follow Teruko around the shop, watches Min show him the easiest way to carry a loaded tray in his hands. Someone's tied his hair up for him. Fuyumi, maybe? Pian Dao's seen that hair clip before. Dressed well with an apron and his hair mostly out of his face, Zuko looks like he fits right in. A little small and a little scrawny, but he fits. Finally, he sighs.
"Ask."
"Where are we going?" Zuko asks. "It's not the way home, to Uncle's home. But Uncle hasn't said anything about going anywhere else after leaving the tea shop." "The grocery," Uncle says, and smiles when Zuko makes a face about it.
"Can I stay in the car?"
"Absolutely not," Uncle replies without missing a beat. "Not in 1,000 years.
He flicks on his turn signal at the stoplight.
"There's a bookstore a few stores down. If you promise not to leave, you could stay there while I shop. Would you like to?" Zuko's babyish need to keep Uncle in sight at all times battles mercilessly with not wanting to be so clingy, and also because books. Zuko hasn't read a book in over a year. Books were the only things that he liked that Father ever really approved of, but only if they were about stuff that he wanted Zuko to like. It was always easy, though, to slip fantasy and the occasional swashbuckler into the stack of dry, boring nonfiction whenever he might find himself in a shop when he was younger, before things got really bad. Father never liked him, but he liked Zuko to be educated, even if it was only in the ways that he wanted him to be. Zuko drags himself out of his head and the instinctive hole of panic that thinking about Ozai puts him in, Side-Eye's uncle, who is side-eyeing him right back. He misses books. He really misses books. "Are you going to take a long time?" Zuko asks finally, voice small. "Not a long time," Uncle says gently, without pity or condescension. "We don't need a lot of things, but we need some basics. You can always just come into the store with me if you'd prefer. Whatever you want." Zuko considers this, and then eventually shakes his head. "No." Zuko ducks his head and stares down at his own hands, fingers laced together tightly enough that his knuckles are white. "I want to look at books." Part of him waits for Uncle to take it back, that because he hesitated too long in deciding, because he's such a baby about everything, he's taken it off the table entirely. Father did that sometimes. It was always a test that Zuko tended to fail, even though he knew better. "That doesn't happen." Uncle nods to him with a quiet sound of acceptance, like he knows that any further discussion might just break him for real. Keeps driving. The bookstore isn't as big as one of the chain ones, but it's bigger than Zuko expects. Uncle walks him in, and offhandedly mentions to the young woman commandeering the register that Zuko is to remain within the building, and where he himself will be. Zuko, in the meantime, has been distracted by the books lined up neatly on shelves and stacked upon the tables. He's so distracted, in fact, that he doesn't even notice the soft look on his face right before he reminds Zuko to not leave or talk to any strangers. Zuko resists the urge to snort, even as he waves to Uncle's retreating back. Like he is going to be talking to strangers. Please. It's enough to touch the books, honestly, to pull them off the shelves and flip them open just long enough to catch a whiff of warm paper and ink before putting them back. He tries not to hold any of them for too long. It'll be too tempting to start reading them, or worse, to start wanting them. He's caught out quickly, though, when the manager clears her throat and eyeballs him. "You know," she says, "there are some chairs in the back. You're welcome to pick out a few to read before your father comes back." Zuko jerks a little on instinct, and opens his mouth to protest, vehemently, that in no way, shape, or form is Uncle his father, and then changes his mind. It's a word he can't even think without feeling like he's about to start vibrating out of his body. Uncle is Uncle. Zuko doesn't want him to be anything else. In the end, though, he doesn't protest her phrasing. The next book he pulls off the shelf, Zuko sends her a testing side eye. She's watching him do it, and when he makes eye contact, she gives an encouraging nod. "Well then. Okay." Children need independence, and Zuko, more than most, needs to know that Iroh trusts him. Iroh knows this. Knowing this, and still walking out the door, away from him, are two very different things. He knows the shop well, and has spoken often with the owner. It's a safe space for him, but that doesn't stop the uneasy twist in his guts that comes from walking away. Tomorrow he's getting him a cell phone, if more for Iroh's peace of mind than anything else. It also doesn't stop Iroh from hustling up and down the aisles at a brisker pace than normal. The checkout line goes excruciatingly slowly, and Iroh forces himself to actually put the groceries in the car before going back for Zuko. He pushes open the door to the bookstore, glances around, and does not see hide nor hair of his nephew. Iroh doesn't panic. No, his heart just flies into his throat like it decided to live there. No big deal or anything. No panic here. For a moment, he stands in the doorway, checking shelf to shelf, and fighting the sudden chill laying low in his stomach. "He's in the back, mister." Iroh jerks and glances over at the same young woman he'd spoken to earlier about Zuko being here alone. She's eyeballing him with a knowing stare, like she's seen his buried panic and wants to put him out of his misery. Iroh is grateful for her mercy. A few steps towards the back of the shop is all it takes for his ears to be able to pick up the soft sounds of someone reading aloud. Zuko's not sitting in a chair, even though there are multiple empty ones available. He's sitting on the floor, and two smaller children, maybe around the age of 4, are bracketing his sides, both peering over his knees at the book he's holding. There's a substantial stack of chapter books piled up on the chair behind him, but Zuko's reading from a glossy picture book. "You wouldn't fight and be fierce no matter what they did. He just sat and smelled." Zuko's reading voice is quiet and soft, careful to pronounce every word correctly. "And the Banderilleros were mad, and the Picadores were madder, and the Matador was so mad he cried because he couldn't show off with his cape and sword, so they had to take Ferdinand home." There's a soft touch on Iroh's upper arm, and he turns to see a woman leaning against one of the shelves. The look on her face is warm when she looks from Zuko to one of the children hovering next to him and looking at the pictures. "Your son is very sweet," she says, quietly enough to not interrupt. "Mine gets so antsy when we go out sometimes, but she's been sitting with him almost the whole time. You've done a good job." Iroh's heart feels too big for his body. There's no way for him to say that he had nothing to do with Zuko's soft heart and softer nature, and furthermore, has no idea how those things haven't been crushed out of him by his experiences, and still be socially acceptable. So in the end he says nothing, just stands quietly next to her and waits for Zuko to finish. "And for all I know, he is sitting there still, under his favorite cork tree, smelling the flowers just quietly." Zuko pauses for effect, but his own quiet voice gives a telling, treacherous shake, as if he's feeling too many things to hold them. "He is very happy." Iroh's heart twists hard, and his next breath sounds a little more like he's clearing his throat. The spell snaps and breaks, and Zuko's dark head jerks up at the sound. He looks openly alarmed until he realizes that it's only Iroh. Then, and only then, does his expression melt into relief. "Uncle," he says, and snaps the book shut, scrambles to his feet. "You're all done?" "All done," Iroh confirms. Zuko hands Ferdinand over to one of his companions and begins to gather up the stacks of his own reading material, shelving them appropriately without being asked. "Zuko." The boy stops. "If there's anything you like, hold on to it. We'll buy it and take it home." Zuko's hand still, hovering over a thick paperback with a green cover that's definitely probably too big for a 12-year-old. He wants it badly, though. That much is obvious. Iroh doesn't need to be a genius to know what Zuko's thinking. He's clearly torn, internally debating where the line is between enough and too much, and it makes Iroh's heart hurt a little to see it. "Zuko," he repeats, very quietly, "give those here. If you like them, we'll get them. All of them." He holds out his hands expectantly and waits. Zuko goggles at him for a long, long moment. Iroh keeps waiting for him, hands open and outstretched, however long it takes for Zuko to realize that it's not a trick or a trap or a joke. Finally, Zuko places the large, thick book into Iroh's hands. Brave Story is emblazoned across the cover. Iroh keeps waiting, till a wrinkle in time, the Phantom Tollbooth, Howl's Moving Castle, and the voyages of Dr. Doolittle join the stack. Slowly, the pile grows till it has to be split between the both of them. Zuko finally stops.
Sorry, he mumbles and looks away, shifting his own stack in his hands. It's a lot. More than sorry. I'll put some...
Absolutely not, Iroh interrupts, firmly but gently.
I told you, didn't I? If you want them, we'll get them.
Besides, he continues, when it's clear that Zuko's still anxious about it, it's good for a young man to read. These are large books and impressive for your age. I'm very proud of you.
Zuko freezes, looking stunned and a little bit like he's been hit over the head. Makes him look very, very young. Younger even than he already is.
Okay, he whispers. The way he clutches his stack of books to his chest only reinforces that Iroh made the right call.
Thank you. A shy, tiny smile curves his lips upwards.
Such a small little thing. But Iroh can't remember the last time he saw Zuko smile that sweetly. He would have been very, very small indeed.
A triple-digit charge for the credit card is a more than fair trade for that smile.
The woman at the desk blinks at the 20-odd books that get dropped in front of her, and she looks briefly from Zuko's quietly and badly hidden elation to Iroh's pleasant determination to not make a big deal out of it. She smiles.
Found everything you needed? She asks.
The question gets directed toward Zuko. He looks surprised to be addressed, but nods silently. He doesn't offer anything more than that, and Iroh's not surprised by his reservation. It'll be a while, if ever, before Zuko is truly at ease around strangers. It's fine. He doesn't have to be. The drive home is a quiet one, but for different reasons this time. Zuko can't resist pulling one of his new books out of the shopping bag they've been packed in and flipping it open, thumbing through the pages and seeking out specific passages, as if reacquainting himself with an old friend.
You've read them before? Iroh asks.
Most of them, Zuko answers, without taking his eyes off of the print inside.
I had a lot of these at...
He can't make himself say the word home. And Iroh can't blame him. Ozai's home is no longer Zuko's home, and hasn't been for a long, long time. Iroh's home isn't Zuko's home either, not yet. But Iroh wants it to be, hopes that it can be. At the traffic lights, Iroh takes his eyes off the road to side-eye Zuko, relaxed in a way that Iroh hasn't seen in years. Watches him and dares to think, for the first time since getting off the phone with his brother, that it's going to be okay. That Iroh gets to keep him.
Are you sure that this is the best way to do this? Piandao asks, doubtful,
even as he steps, silent like some giant cat, through Iroh's front door.
If the kid wakes up, and I'm here and you're not, he's going to freak, and you know it.
Iroh acknowledges his friend's misgivings and continues to shrug on his dark jacket, slipping the flash drive that his brother wants so badly into his pocket.
If it comes to that, he says, then tell him the truth. But if he knew, he would only worry.
Worse, Iroh knows. He would probably try and find some way to come along out of some sort of misguided protectiveness.
That is unacceptable. It shouldn't be longer than an hour. He should sleep the whole time. It doesn't sit well with me to leave him in the house alone.
Which is probably why you should just tell him what you're doing,
Piandao says pointedly. Iroh ignores him. I'll tell him in the morning, when it's over and done with, You don't... I can't let him worry over something like this when there's nothing he can do. I can't do that to him.
As long as you're willing to deal with the consequences, if things don't go how you want them to.
If it comes to that, I will handle it. But right now, I'd like him to take his peace of mind where he can get it. He worries enough.
I won't take this time from him, too.
Pian Dao clearly disagrees, but says nothing other than quietly requesting a text when it's done, and he's on his way back. The dishonesty doesn't really sit well with Iroh, either, but the decision's been made, and he's sticking with it. He doesn't have the luxury of changing his mind now. The address he's been sent is across town, near a run-down little park. It's not a shock. Iroh's not expecting to be met at Ozai's home, or any other kind of place where there would be a significant amount of foot traffic. It feels like a cliché to be doing this late at night, but the idea of meeting Ozai anywhere in broad daylight is laughable. Iroh hasn't seen his brother in years, but he can't help picturing him now as Zuko's personal monster, tall and dark and faceless, in a way that could only come from a child. Privilege that Zuko probably, definitely, doesn't have. Iroh knows too well that when Zuko pictures his father, his image is all too clear. He shakes it off, pats for the shape with the flash drive in his pocket, just to make sure that it's there. There's a dark car parked across the street. They're not far, Iroh realizes, from the alleyway that he'd initially found Zuko in. It's a thought that initially makes him feel sick, but strengthens into resolve moments later. That's why he's doing this, so that Zuko won't ever have to worry about this again. So that he can go home and tell him that he's free and that he's going to be okay. So that he can say those things and not feel, in the back of his mind, like he's lying. Iroh parks a quick block away and walks his way over to the dark car. The door opens soundlessly the moment that Iroh is close enough to see it. The back seat, naturally, because that's something that hasn't changed. Ozai's never driven for himself if he could help it. Iroh slides into the car. There's an opaque screen that separates the front seat from the back. Plush, buttery leather seats and plenty of legroom. Iroh hates all of it on principle.
I hope you appreciate the effort that this took to expedite this process without getting the courts involved,
Ozai says, instead of hello, shuffles through a leather-bound folder in his lap.
You should appreciate the effort that it takes not to strangle you to death with my bare hands,
Iroh replies calmly, eyes the folder. Is that all of it? Ozai holds up a hand.
Your end of the bargain, he says.
His voice is flat, like this is nothing more than a business transaction. Maybe it is. Maybe that's all his children ever were to him. Iroh remembers Zuko's shy, anxious smile in the bookstore. It feels like he could ignite. He stomps it down, burying flames underneath a layer of calm, cool lake water. He's here for Zuko, he reminds himself. He's here to keep him safe and to make sure that this man will never be able to touch him again. What's Iroh's pride when compared to Zuko's safety? What's pride ever done for any of them at all? Iroh holds up the drive, turns it over in the dim overhead light. Without a word, he pulls out his laptop, opens it, and inserts the drive. Takes a moment before the directory pops up, and he scrolls down the list of files.
Satisfied, little brother?
Iroh asks. He doesn't try and mask his disdain. Give me that. He doesn't wait before he's plucking the folder out of Ozai's hands, opening it and skimming the pages inside. Everything he asked for is there, signed, stamped, and notarized. Proof that it's been pushed through the system, illegally, without involvement of the local court system. All of it under Iroh's name. Zuko's birth certificate and social security card. a stapled stack that proves to be vaccination history, eye exams, and dental records. "Is there anything else?" Iroh asks. Frosty. "A box in the trunk." Ozai extends a hand. "Hand it over and get out of my car." Iroh reaches out, as if to drop the drive into his hand, and then pauses. "Did you ever care for him, Ozai? Even once?" He doesn't mean to ask that question, because he doesn't want to know the answer. He already thinks that he knows. Comes out anyway. "Or have your children only ever been tools to you?" Ozai gives a hard little snort, the first indication of actual emotion to come from him. "Always so soft and so stupid, Iroh," he says. "Tools should be useful, or they get thrown away." He flexes his fingers. "Your sentiment is already getting dull. Take what you came for and consider our transaction over. Are we done here?" Iroh drops the drive into Ozai's waiting hand. "We're done," he snaps, practically kicks open the car door in his haste to get out. Not out of any sort of fear, but from the trembling in his hands and the roar in his heart that demands blood for it. Again, he stomps it down. He hasn't come this far to lose his head. Iroh has made a life out of playing smarter, not harder. He's not going to mess it up now. Maybe he would for just himself, but not when Zuko's the one on the line. He doesn't see Ozai so much as move, but the trunk pops open anyway. A dented old shipping box has been stuffed into it, taped shut and halfway crushed by the hatch, haphazardly placed as if it doesn't even matter. Iroh wrestles it out of the trunk and closes the lid with an aggressive slam that rattles the whole car. The car starts with a quiet rumble, washing Iroh in the red of headlights. Then he's left alone on the street in the dark. The box and folder in his hands are the only indication that anything out of the ordinary has happened here. The walk back to the car feels longer than it is. "It's done. On my way back now," he texts Pian Dao when he sets the box gently on the seat, slides the folder underneath so that it won't slip off, even goes so far as to buckle it in before fastening his own belt. He thinks that maybe he should open it to see what's inside, but thinks better of it. It's Zuko's box, and he should be the one to open it. Iroh already owes him an apology for going behind his back about all of this. The least he can do is let the boy open his own box. For safety's sake, he gives it a quick rattle, and hears nothing but the sound of papers and the light thud of what might be a book, a doodad or two. It's not a large box, and it's not heavy either. It doesn't even feel full. That's all Ozai kept of his son? Iroh thinks of the taped-up boxes gathering dust in the hall closet. Imagines consolidating Luten into a single box as if he doesn't matter. Nearly has to pull over for some deep breathing. Ozai is many things, more even than Iroh initially realized. Cold, definitely. Callous, probably from the day he was born. But also efficient, and not a little bit impulsive. How long did he wait before removing his son's presence from his life? Did he even do it himself, or did he simply delegate the job to someone else? Iroh thinks about a stranger going through Ozai's home and erasing Zuko from each room until all that's left of him are scraps forgotten in closets, and it's everything he has not to turn the car around and do something he might regret. Iroh has enough regrets, and absently reaches out to run a finger over the spine of the folder that pokes out from underneath the box. He did the job he came here to do. Zuko will never be compelled into going back to that man. Iroh feels more secure than he has at any given moment since receiving that phone call from his nephew. Zuko is not okay, but he will be. Iroh can keep him safe. The thought is warm in his stomach. Years ago, when Natsu had come to him, bright and beaming and with her hands on her stomach, too soon to be showing yet. Iroh had expected to be scared. Parenthood was a scary thing. Responsibility was a scary thing. Iroh had expected to be scared. The fear would come later. Those first feelings were a whirlwind of joy that roared and sang and came to roost in his heart and had never really left, even when they had been joined by grief. Before that moment, he hadn't known that such happiness could exist. What he feels now isn't the same, but isn't all that different either. It's a soft, silly move, but Iroh can't help reaching out to pat the top of the cardboard box. It's not a lot, but not unlike Iroh himself. Hopefully, it can be enough. Suddenly, there's a screech of noise and a pair of headlights that shine into the windshield, bright and blinding. The other car is going too fast and too purposeful, and Iroh shouts when he wrenches the wheel, veering off the road with a squeal of burning rubber and the crunch of metal and glass.